Okay, let's start the report back session and we start with group one. It's Tom.
Okay, so we had a good discussion. On the first one, first of all, I think there was a bit of preference in some cases for the predecessor method, especially if the NCI is mostly employees or non-traded, but so we kind of decided that the NCI was significant. Then it might be reasonable to go to more of a fair value, and significant, we were fairly confident that publicly traded NCIs might be into that category. We also noted that there are often shareholder agreements and legislation to protect minorities. If, however, the NCI is significant for question one, largely we're happy with publicly traded, then we did think that the distribution method would be best. There was kind of a caveat that we put on that, though, is that in general, we thought that the distribution would sort of approach zero in most cases, in that if we were all bargaining and doing the right thing, that the distribution wouldn't be very large, in which case you would have mostly goodwill, and then so the question becomes, is these are really rare or the distribution is really small, is it not simpler just to put everything into goodwill? So I think that's where we were on the first one. On the second one, we could live with either. Just before I leave the first one, there was also a bit of concern about to the degree that distribution exists, it rests on some valuations that may be hard to prove unequivocally. So there was some bit of concern on the net. So again, in Q2, question two, we got a bit of advice sort of on you know, when would this matter, and if it should matter, and again, we thought it was relatively rare, so typically the with respect to, say, debt or something, if the subsidiary was somehow isolated from the parent, then it might matter, and where it did matter, people would like to see retrospective. And again, there was this sort of question that there was a bit of discussion about cost. One member suggested that in their case, they would almost always do a retrospective if they went through this just for internal purposes. So it probably wouldn't be that costly for them. Perhaps for another organization, it might be costly. And so while retrospective, again, is the best case, it's most important only in a subset of instances. For example, maybe you're isolated and you have debt, and so that was what we thought was the best. But again, there was a bit of questioning about just how frequent this would be, and would it be costly for some organizations. That's it.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Next, group two, Gary.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Martin. We had a very good discussion, and I think to some extent that the feedback was the opposite of what I was expecting to hear. But that's okay, that's over here. On question one, I think the preparers of the rule were unanimous. You don't overstate goodwill. To the extent there is a that you actually objectively measure a distribution, there was some concerns, as your group did. Can the stuff be reliably measured? The mechanism we ourselves recognize measurement uncertainty. But assuming you can demonstrate, or it's obvious you have a distribution, since preparers do not want goodwill overstated, that would imply a direct charge to equity. The users are a little bit more niche on whether I should just do it as disclosure or have an equity charge and so on. There did not seem to be any support for the second alternative, which is put in goodwill and impair it the next day. Just deal with a straightforward transaction in there. So on balance, if you counted the total headcount in the room between users and preparers, there's a decent majority for don't put in goodwill, take the direct charge off the equity. The second question, the first question again. We got a couple of requests for staff follow-up work for further work. One of which is did we consider, and I don't believe we have, situations where the controlling shareholders or central government or government controlled entities, should that make a difference as opposed to being for-profit, you know, corporations and so on? We didn't process what the answer could be or should be, just ask you to consider it. And the other one was, is if you truly are paying, overpaying, we probably might want to look, what do NCIs think about that, you know, how prevalent is it, and so on. On the second question about do you retrospectively combine these companies back to the first day of the earliest reporting period or cut in prospectively, the preparers, the point is, look, within the internal consolidating systems, we certainly can do it. So that was not a concern. The process was not a concern for the preparers. There are certainly cautions, and one of our examples, I think it's on slide 26, where the subsidiary A we created is essentially an asset carve-out of a parent, and always be leery and careful on asset carve-outs. They're much more difficult than moving subsidiaries around. I think the users, I think the general sense was do it prospectively and put pro forma information into the notes. I would say the underlying premise or logic was don't create something that did not heretofore exist in there. They were not combined in the past. Let's not pretend that they were. Give me the pro forma information in the footnote. Not a hugely strong bias preference either way. We can work with it as the primaries or the footnotes. However, the sense was the primaries should be what exists, not what might have existed. And then it's sort of a broadly speaking, sort of, you know, don't put pool of interest type accounting in the primary statement for these things. That's it. Thank you.
If I could just add one point. So I think it's fair to say in our group, when the users talked about prospective information, they meant something slightly different than will be presented in the slides. So in the staff's sort of proposed alternative, we would still provide historical information for the entity that is identified as a receiving entity, and not provide historic information for transfer entities. And I think in our group, users who advocated prospective accounting, they were saying, well, if you have a NUCA, then don't provide, NUCA didn't exist before, don't provide any historical information at all in the financial statements, only provide it in the notes. So basically, you start with 0.0 for NUCA. I think it's quite important for us.
Okay, thanks. Next is from Suez.
Yeah, thank you. So in our group on the first issue of how to come for a distribution, it was difficult to get to recommendation because frankly the main message from this group is that this is theoretical. This cannot exist in practice. Even if in areas where the legal protection would not exist, if you were a minority shareholder, you would get your protection by contract. So they couldn't see a situation in which this would happen. And I think that's the main message. But we nevertheless discussed this theoretical possibility to come to, in fact, elements that are very similar to what Tom has already reported. So, and also Gary to some extent, the measurement, the evaluation would be so difficult in the absence of a price being arrived at in a competitive environment that even measuring the distribution itself would be dubious. As I also said, in a context of recognition, the impairment which is considered absolutely not workable. And as in Tom's group, the current value model, if applied, would really need to be justified by a significant minority. So that's for the first. The second, in a way, is consistent, I think, with what we heard, but it eventually expressed a bit differently. So in these cases that we had to consider, the information would be eventually useful for lenders, creditors that we had to bring funding to the entity. And from that perspective, having the ability to work on trends and pass information is useful. So in a way, these arguments would lead to retrospective. Nevertheless, the notion of retrospective, in other words, making up accounts to portray something that in fact did not exist, is not considered to be the best route. Pro forma information is there to help. In terms of feasibility, if legal entities existed prior to the combination, then it would not be so difficult to bring the information together. However, you may have the carve-out situation from an existing business that are very, very complicated. So, like, if you carve out a business that takes away a part of the production facility, for example, but the product lines benefit from before and after, benefit from the same production facilities. I mean, after the entities have been separated, there would be some disagreement transactions in order to benefit from that same facility. And making up what these would have been if things had been separated beforehand, would not come with the level of reliability that you would want to see in comparatives. In other words, that could be eventually done as a pro forma, where you disclose all the assumptions and methodology that you use in order to get there.
Okay, thanks. François, Nick?
So thank you. So lots of interesting perspectives on the first question from our group and helpful ones. And we didn't see these as necessarily always being just theoretical constructs, as Francoise's group is suggesting. But we did question how realistic it was to assess the fair value of that acquired entity, irrespective of how it's going to be accounted for. And if that fair value exercise was going to happen, a desire to see the range of fair values just rather than just a point number. We had some interesting observations about the language that was being used, and that it was felt, using the word distribution was felt to be confusing. And if it is a potential overpayment, just call it a potential overpayment rather than talk about a distribution. On balance, in terms of let's say we can now measure it, we have this distribution, how to account for it. The preference was for that to be recognized, measured and recognized, rather than a note disclosure. And I think the best description of that was that the note disclosure just prolongs the agony for the minority shareholders. And at first of all, you read the bad news in the notes, and then later on you get the impairment, which impedes your dividend distribution potential in some jurisdictions. You get two lots of bad news rather than just one lot up front. Why not just do it up front? I think was the overall basis. There was also some observations that clearly there are tax consequences and perhaps issues for distributable reserves that would vary by jurisdiction by jurisdiction. And I'd say the last takeaway was really from the user side, to actually say what really matters is information about specific deals, and to have information to understand the economics of those deals, what has the economic consideration to be, information to help predict future cash flows that economic consideration is going to generate, and it's through that mechanism that the users will assess whether there's been an over or underpayment. So that was question one. On question two, we started off with a heartfelt plea for pro forma information generally in all transactions, and a wish to see pro forma free cash flow and EBITDA information for all transactions. But coming back to business combinations under common control, I think there was a consensus within the group that actually we didn't need the full pro forma, that actually the retrospective approach was fine. And we looked at a number of circumstances. So we considered the needs of creditors and lenders, because there is no NCI in these circumstances. And generally, in most market conditions, they are in a position to demand the information that they need themselves to make those lending decisions. The other scenario could be in a pre-IPO situation, but quite how you define what is pre-IPO was a question. But even under those circumstances, it was recognised in most jurisdictions, regulatory requirements will mean that pro forma information is required on the listing, and the really this was a matter for the entity to decide what they wanted to do. Clearly, given cost considerations, generally it'd be easier not to do the full pro forma but to do the retrospective. And I'd say that was, I think it's fair to say that was probably a consensus across the group.
Okay, thanks, Nick. In group four likes performance, where they were yesterday. And any further comments? Julia, do you have any questions? No, there's Sandra.
One of the other points that we made is, you know, you have to look at unintended consequences. So FinCap rules and whether or not if you had a current value basis, you could end up negatively impacting the minority shareholders because you may reduce your ability to issue dividends. And then on the current value basis, if you change your underlying books and records, you've got ongoing costs because you have to eliminate those in consolidation. So have that cost going forward. We talked about all the information may not always be used. I think you need to be judicious so you don't require lots of disclosures if it's really not going to benefit the shareholders or users in general.
Concerning the comments made that these overpayments may not happen in reality, I don't know if they do or not, but I have a feeling that if there are new requirements to recognize overpayments as distributions, or either recognize it as goodwill and disclose it in explanatory notes, I have a hard time seeing that as being legally accepted, and the consequence might be that by having this new accounting requirement, you might prohibits these type of transactions, overpayments from happening in the future, because when you point out that these overpayments are happening, I think that these might have some legal consequences for the party benefiting from it.
Okay,